Before we leave number 31, I may have said this before, but I want to make sure you know it. A person loses the virtue of faith, no longer has the virtue, meaning the power, the supernatural ability to believe, by either denying or doubting. That second verb is the hard one. By either denying or doubting a single revealed truth. Like what? Like the real presence. Like what? Like the priesthood and the power of consecrating bread and wine into body and blood of Christ. Like what? Like the primacy of the Pope. That person therefore has ceased to be a Catholic in the deepest, deepest theological sense of the word. Now the facade may be there. Vocables can be used. But the person has lost the supernatural power to still believe.
Does that mean they're not in the state of grace anymore?
Please?
Are they not in the state of grace at that point?
That's right. However, and there better be a however, because you want these people to get to heaven. And you can't imagine the kind of people that I pray for, whom I know just given up their faith, and who may still be functioning in the church. Behold, of course, although they have lost the state of grace, they are still receiving, and they should be prayed for, what we call actual graces. And God, or Christ, when he raps at the door, he pounds. And sometimes with a sledgehammer. And sometimes he breaks down the door. And it is an audible prayer to ask God to break down, some people's door. If only a tragedy will wake that person up. Number 32.
I'm running into a number of I have run into a number of professed Catholics who belong to other faiths who at one time were members of Catholic faith.
One time were Catholic.
Yeah. But they are now going to other churches. And I struggle with how does one begin the process of trying to bring them back into the faith. And the one question that I keep asking, I keep coming
back. I would say this. First of all, come back to Michael's question. I firmly believe that most people who leave the Catholic Church do so out of ignorance. Now, the immediate occasion for leaving the church is not intellectual, it's moral. People want to, do what they want to do, and the Catholic Church, as the expression goes, stands in the way. So that then, for, let's call them reconverted, that they need to be instructed. Now there are people, and only God knows who they are, but there are people who we can safely say are in bad faith. In other words, they know better or they knew better. And they may be living in sin, whatever grave sins they may be committing. However, as far as leaving the church, so ceasing to be a Catholic, it is, I think, in most cases, ignorance. Now, the problem is compounded and many times over by the massive scandal, to use that term, among Catholics, including those who should be leading and teaching the church. So that, in other words, they will go to a Seventh-day Baptist and become the fundamentalist or whatever. And it may be, sadly, that fundamentalist church may give them more of still sound doctrine than maybe they were getting from the Catholic parish, say, to which they belong. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I'm sure I mentioned this before. The explosive combination over the centuries that has driven millions out of the Catholic Church, combination of immorality of the clergy and ignorance of the people. But the people do not understand their faith, and you have immorality of the clergy. Because then, the people, not knowing their faith well enough or deeply enough, they tell you, this is a Catholic church, forget it. And that's what happened, see, in the 16th century. So that there would be then, on both sides, education, but also how important this is. There's one thing which the Holy See has been telling me for years. Whatever you do, promote good Orthodox vocations to the priesthood and the religious life. Because that has been the seat of the trouble. So that, in other words, it is both learning their faith and somehow being in contact with or associated with what is authentic Catholicity in practice. That they know someone who is a bona fide Catholic and who is living up to the teaching of Christ. That, by the way, affects all of us.
Father, where do you send a young man who wants to become a priest? What order can you send him to and feel safe?
Well, there are. And we could take time out outside of the... Yes. In fact, in Rome, the Holy Father Secretary, some years ago, in conversation with him, he asked me, could you recommend, or what seminaries could you recommend the United States? So I ticked off some names. He said, thanks. We've got those already. Do you know any others? But there are. Pick that up. How are we doing on the time? Not quite it. Speak as loudly as you can, please.
It's 7:54. So you have about a half hour. Right?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
30 minutes.
Oh, 30 minutes. Thank you. Thanks for telling me how much longer we have to go. Thank you. 32. Persecution is one of the marks of the true church. Yes. Does anybody, by any chance, pardon me for asking, have a copy of the Pocket Catholic Dictionary here in chapel? No matter. I'm not sure it's in the pocketbook edition. But at least in the larger edition, under, I think, is Marks of the Church. I have seen Robert Bellarmine's 15 Marks of the True Church, and Persecution is one of the 15. In other words, you just don't maintain the church in unity, in holiness, in light of the vigor of Christ, without paying for it. And by now, some people have become professional adjusters, living in a culture which, of course, is not Catholic. Employment, wherever we're employed, people we associate with. Well, percentage wise, most of them are not Catholic. Even those who may be nominally Catholic may not be, you know, all that Catholic. So, you know, we keep, as I say, adjusting, adapting. And it's, you know, books in psychology, it's just, it's cold outside, you put on a warm coat. When it's hot in the summer, you turn on the air conditioner. You adjust. Well, let me tell you, if you want to really, and that adverb is important, if you want to really be faithful to Christ, really, there's a limit to that adjustment. And the obverse is, well, whatever name you give it, criticism, misunderstanding, opposition, persecution. That's why, for me, among the teachings of Christ, the most satisfying of the last 35 years, one of the most satisfying has been the eighth beatitude. Remember? Blessed are they who suffer persecution for justice' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people calumniate you, speak all kinds of evil against you, persecute you for my name. Rejoice and be glad. Thanks, Lord, for your reward is great in heaven. He didn't say, for your reward is great on earth. It ain't. We wouldn't be here this evening as I've been trying to live that eighth beatitude. Hope you understand what I'm saying. I repeat, we can become, oh, such sincere, I'll use the word again, adjusters. Have any of you ever read anything of Vance Packard? Remember Vance Packard? He was a bestseller. He wrote Hidden Persuaders and so on. He gave a lecture to some 500 who were called religionists. And he spoke to a crowded audience, all ministers of whatever religion. Yours truly. I've never forgotten that lecture. He said, one of the deepest instincts in human nature is to conformity. We are instinctive conformists. And all the industries know that. All they need is somebody to start something. Having a certain kind of apparel, or a certain brand of this, a certain make of that. And pretty soon, others want to conform. To remain a full-fledged, one of them, honest to God Catholic in today's world. number 32 is to fulfill in our own lives one of the marks of the true church. And you don't have to call people up. Would you mind persecuting me? Won't have to remind anybody. Human beings will oblige. And the most painful persecution is from those who may be nearest and dearest to you. As Christ said, remember, our most painful enemies will be, who can finish the sentence, the members of our own household. Now, 33. I don't have my chart with me, so I'll have to depend on your help. Credibility, number 33, corresponds to
39.
Intellectual, rational basis for belief. Good. The key word there is rational. I'm sure I've said this before. There are no unbelievers except the totally and completely insane in mental institutions. Every rational human being is a believer. That's a condition, by the way, for being rational. You order a meal at a restaurant. Serve you the meal. Leave the question. Well, is this a safe meal to eat? Remember, piece of evidence, I think I told you this, when she was reforming the Carmelites? Remember? She had to be careful in what convents of her own sisters she would eat, because they tried to poison her. So she would resort to hard-boiled eggs, which she felt was safe. Everybody believes. Every rational person believes. Who would ever learn the ABCs? Well, if they believe, then, well, the alphabet is indeed A, B, C, D, down to Z. So, the key word is rational basis for belief. And that's what the Catholic Church provides. And notice we're even in telescoping words, because we cannot say everything, otherwise this wouldn't be a quiz. It is not just credibility, it is just rational basis for belief, but fully rational, authentically rational basis for belief. And thus, for example, the Muslims do not have a fully rational basis for belief. Just don't. Or the Anglicans, whom I taught, for example, their seminary, Seabury Western in Chicago. And I tell them, in other words, and you trace, just to use Anglicanism as an example, how did Anglicanism begin? Well, it began because, one man by the name of Henry VIII wanted to dispose of his wife, Catherine of Aragon. No theology there, by the way. You have to read books of theology to for a husband to want another woman. And then, I was in Tijuana, as you know, for 11 days. Mother Teresa is well, by the way. Although I talked to her yesterday in Rome. And again, she's weaker. Okay, keep her in your prayers. The church needs her. But we spent several hours in conversation, and Danny was with me in Tijuana. We had all this apparatus and this, and I really needed this. A bus station just outside the convent. I take a bus every 3 minutes, leaving the bus station. Well, among the you were talking about
credibility.
Please?
Credibility.
The credibility,
right,
of the one true church. And the sisters are working in so many countries. So I told them, sisters, you need, you simply must get some information, even if it's somewhat condensed, of these different sects and whatever religion that you're constantly meeting up with. So then I talked to Mother Teresa. So she said, yes, we need that. So we need that. So we need that. And what I will try to do is break up the books even that are out of print to get these things back into print, because to cope with, for example, whoever it may be, but figures, I think I've given you the figures for the number of Latin American Catholics that lost to the Catholic Church since Vatican II. I gave you your own figures, didn't I? 40 million. And to be able to satisfy one's own mind that our own faith is totally rational, and that other faiths are not rational. Totally rational. In other words, there's such a thing, and this is partly an answer to your question, not of our minds, and it's in a way implicit in what we're going through here. In the last analysis, when a person accepts the Catholic faith, even though the person may have been baptized as an infant, as a Catholic, and reaches the age of reason, of course, then, you don't just reach the age of reason, you use your reason. And you stand in judgment on your own faith. Even though the last analysis, in order to believe, you must have God's grace. Without that, no one believes in the true faith. However, we must do our part. And the single most important contribution that we have to make is to satisfy our minds. Am I making sense? See, the reason must be satisfied. Otherwise, our worst enemy would not be the heretics outside the church. They won't be the agnostics or the atheists. They won't be the Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses. They will be our worst enemy. It will be our own reason. As we're constantly thinking, and we've got to be able to defend in our own minds constantly that what I'm believing, what I'm doing, is perfectly rational.
Isn't the problem that even the notion of reason or truth itself is hardly recognizable anymore, that people really don't know what rational means anymore?
Yep.
Rational or in the sense of,
yeah, I think
the truth.
Because there's so much, so much unreason, so little use of the reason being made. And the media, by the way, even I, I'm sure you've watched it yourself, or seen it yourselves. Intelligent people, I know them, for hours, literally, the mind is being penetrated for hours. And the person, there's no thinking going on, it's all passive. Passive intake. Now that we are producing such a passively, shall I even call it still, such a passive state of mind, that even to as you say, to even know what does it mean to reason, to ask intelligent questions of oneself. And this century is not finished yet. In less than 100 years, the most massive change in human history has been made on the human mind, maybe by the media.
The passing of reason is actually a sorrow to the church, isn't it? The passing of reason is really sorrowful for the church as the faith itself, because reason has always been an ally of the faith.
This is what we're coping with. On the other hand, this is why we're here. Here we go. Number 34, prophecy. Yes.
41.
30? 41.
41.
Now, first of all, that refers to the prophecies of the Old Testament, which were fulfilled, as we believe, in Christ. And therefore the ancient prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, foretelling the Messiah, were gifted with what we call intellectual miracles. Their minds could predict the future and foretell. But Christ also, being the Son of God in human form, Christ made many predictions. And by the way, in context, among the predictions of Christ, one that we'd better recognize as being fulfilled with emphasis today is his foretelling how those who are going to be faithful to him are going to be like him. And the price we have to pay. We wouldn't be human if we weren't scared. However, intellectual miracles also refer, for example, to the mystics, the lives of many saints they foretold, events which took place exactly as they were foretold. And, by the way, I believe that Our Lady's prediction of Fatima regarding Russia. And since my own first prayer was in Russian script, naturally my sympathies with the people who are my ancestors. But also the suffering which they've endured for so many years is the purification process. In any case, an intellectual miracle, an example of intellectual miracle, is a prophecy. Remember, the prophecy has to be fulfilled to be verified. Number 35, Roman Pontiff.
Thirty-five also?
Yeah. 35.
Visible center of Catholic unity.
Visible center of Catholic unity. Looks good to me. I can't find any other there that will fit. In teaching the subject, I tell the people that the Roman Pontiff is not only the visible center, is also the audible center and the readable center. In many ways also the demanding center of Catholic unity. So much so, we have been teaching over the years. In the last analysis, after everything has been said and done, all the books have been read, how can you tell whether something is being taught or said or practiced is in conformity with the Catholic faith. What does the Vicar of Christ teach? And for 19 centuries plus, Christ is protected. Talk about a miracle. Has protected the Bishop of Rome. Any errors in faith or morals. And today's word is especially in morals. Homosexuality is a grave sin. It is sodomy. And all the learned, pardon me, dribble to the contrary, notwithstanding. And want to know why? First of all, there are many good rational grounds for, say, homosexuality being wrong. They want to believe it. The Vicar of Christ teaches it. Therefore, it is true. How are we doing other time?
15 minutes, Father.
How much?
15 minutes.
15 minutes, okay.
Excuse me, Father. Did you want to take some time at the end of class to go over? You wanted to talk to us about our focus.
Power.
Our focus, and you give an agenda for us.
Yep. And as you see, in being here, there's so much to cover. Naturally, it becomes, involved enough. The right word. This is my life, and for, I'm sure, for all of you, this is our common faith. And what I might even do, maybe the next time we meet. Now, next Wednesday, I should be home. Wednesday night. I'm going to Peoria, Lord willing. Sunday night, be there till about Wednesday afternoon. So we'll have class then Wednesday? Right. It may be, Daniel, that I might spell out in more detail what we're after. Let me just briefly tell you, some of you already know, some of you may not know. The purpose of these Wednesday classes is not, and I want to emphasize the negative, it is not to provide people with some erudition about the Catholic faith. It can't serve that purpose. That's not my purpose. My purpose is to provide training for two groups of people. Namely, women called Marian catechists and men called Ignatian catechists. There were two associations formed, I repeat, under the guidance and direction of the Holy See. And the hope is that from both the men and the women, there will in time be enough leaders who will be able to teach the faith to others. And not only teach it themselves individually, but more important, and the word leaders is important, that they will then inspire, encourage others. Now somebody has got to teach the Catholic faith. Well, to do that, now the teaching can be done in many ways. To do that, there are two principal means. And one of the means we're trying to satisfy here, namely, doctrinal formation. To understand the faith. And the second is spiritual formation. That the person will live or begin to live an above average Catholic life. and frequenting the sacraments, and the practice of prayer, of course, and the practice of virtue. Now, the women started first. They're about 7 years that the Women's Association has started. And some of the women, the Marian Catechists, are under private vows. They'll marry people and take certain private vows. But that's not necessary at this stage. The man, since I've come here, is a little over a year, would you say? It's a man. And now, given my commitments that I have from the church, I even drove me that I possibly can to be in Detroit on Wednesday evening to make sure that I'm here and he would meet. Now I meet the women. We have a meeting for the women here in Detroit now on Tuesdays from 10 to 11:15 in the morning. Now the largest contingent is in the east, in the Washington, D.C. area. Another contingent in Chicago. Others on the west coast, about 15 in western Canada, with men and women. Some in New York, a few in New England. Now, depending on the kind of time the Lord gives me, because I do have various responsibilities, my hope is that there'll be enough people who in time will be able to dedicate themselves under such directives as the Holy See will give us. And for me, this is the way I think. People ask, when are we going to get moving? Well, and Rome says, get moving. Now, for the women, Rome told us to get moving. And specifically, we have now, in fact, we have a formal letter from the Holy Father, Secretary of State, the Marian Catechists, in effect telling us to promote Eucharistic catechesis, to teach, especially the real peasants. Faith and riches, you know, is in many circles even dying out. So does that help as a beginning? You see, now others, of course, are welcome. On the other hand, I want to be real honest with you, because as I say, the church does give me jobs to do, and I try to do whatever I can at the time at my disposal, and also strengthen my disposal. That I want to repeat the purpose. The purpose is not just to brush up on or catch up on my Catholic faith. The purpose is, in all honesty, to train people. And it would be good, and whatever your question, your suggestion, maybe in the next, say, couple of weeks, that I might even give you some very simple questions to answer about your own commitment as you see it. Am I being clear? Now, it doesn't mean whatever you're doing, you would stop doing it. If St. Paul, I tell people, if St. Paul could make a living making tents, you know that. He was a tent maker by profession. Did he have to raise money to, support himself? He told people, look, I'm not asking for the equivalent of a dime from you people. He worked. Made a living, as the expression goes. He evangelized the Mediterranean world. So can you. He says, people, nobody will get to heaven alone. Either we'll help other people get to heaven, or we won't make it ourselves. It's not a clever phrase. Any time left, Daniel?
Father, I think a couple minutes. Do you you recommended that we, or you had us make a retreat when we started the 30-day retreat, the spiritual exercises?
Yeah.
You had us make that. But yeah. Some have not, I don't think have
please?
Not, some have not heard that.
Now let me say this. There is a 30-day retreat, which is one of the conditions for being either a Marian or a Ignatian catechist. 30-day retreat. And the retreat not made 30 days in solitude, because who has that kind of time? And that's not the way St. Ignatius, even when he was giving retreats. There are directors who make a 30-day retreat, giving your job or whatever duties you may have, but then take from 1 to 3 hours a day in mental prayer and meditation. Thanks, Daniel, for bringing this up, because I've basically been teaching for so many years, you see, and thanks for reminding me what the purpose of our gathering here is. So what I might do, not maybe next week, but maybe even next week, but say in the next 2 weeks, briefly, very briefly, summarize what are the conditions for being either a Ignatian or a Marian catechist.
Father, the Knights of Columbus had asked you to give them a retreat a week, I think the 21st, the 22nd, and 23rd. Are you still in town? Are you going to be here those days? Next weekend? Not this
yeah.
weekend, but...
Well, I just... I depend on somebody making appointments for me. And the last I heard was that retreat was postponed.
That's right. So you're free. Free now. You're free at that
yes.
time.
That's what I was told.
If your schedule allows, Father, could you possibly offer a retreat for some of the men that weren't able to be
together? I could. Except, see, because, okay. See, my time in so many ways. Yes, I could. However, it might at least conceptually conflict with what we're talking about. Because, see, this is no weekend retreat business. It's not what I do. I do give retreats. And you know, we retreat to, for example, Marian catechists. It's a 5-day retreat. We're going to West Virginia. Marian catechists. And it's 5 days either in July or in August. But then, see, that's a post-factor retreat. The anti-factor is a 30-day retreat. And now if I had more time at my disposal, I'd be more in contact with the individuals than I. Michael?
I was going to mention, I thought it was very helpful the way you were available for phone consultations during the home retreat. And
so I wanted to do that, but people have got to be serious. In other words, now I am making myself available, but I budget my schedule, you see. For those who are making a 30-day retreat, they schedule what days or what day they'll call me up at what time. And I appreciate it was long distance, they call me up. I love that. Because that too indicates, you know, their seriousness. And then they tell me where they are. For example, I gave a 30-day retreat to a person in Tokyo. A woman hired by the Japanese government hired by the Japanese government, and by the way, she was a Marian catechist who was now in a contemplative convent. you never know what can happen with those 30-day retreats. A professional effort, extraordinarily capable, hired by the Japanese government to teach the Japanese women. And the Japanese government paid her phone calls from Tokyo to Detroit. So yes, but I want to impress you with the, in other words, with the seriousness of this, so that, thanks for bringing this up, Daniel.
Father, could I ask just one more question? If you could survey the people who are here.